Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. You're about to hear a talent on the rise, on and off camera. She's the star, creator, and writer of Chanchi, the recent comedy winner of Series Fest 2023's Independent TV Pilot Competition. She also won for Best Comedy Performance, and one of her co-stars in the pilot, Henry Weekly. Aliza Chenoweth joins me next, live from Tel Aviv, Israel. Also ahead, Fox's syndicated series Boost Impact Network, our classic trivia question, and is this any way to promote the next Summer Olympics? You be the judge. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on top podcast sites from iHeartRadio to Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. This just in, it's Sunday morning, and tomorrow will be televised. Wherever you are across the country, around the world, we welcome you to the first ever weekend edition of the program all about TV's current and future. 56 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. It's going to be a very bright day after a very rainy Saturday up and down the East Coast, including our neck of the woods, the New York metro area. We're delighted to have you with us. We have a wonderful guest coming away live from Tel Aviv, Israel, and we invite you to be part of the program. And if you've been with us for the first time, here's how it works. You pick up the phone, you dial in, and you interact with our guest with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country or around the globe. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. If you're shy about the phone, no problem with us. You just use your chat room. We have a room right ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or use the room. Either way, we're interacting with you, and that's what we like about this program. And while the program is on the air, you can interact with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. I'll be live with you. Our guest from Tel Aviv, Israel, will be live with all of us after these news notes. More than 1,000 episodes of series syndicated by Fox will show up on Impact Network before the end of this month. Episodes of Jay Leno's You Bet Your Life, which, by the way, just was halted because of the writer's strike, 25 Words or Less, Divorce Court, Dish Nation, and other series will run weekdays from 4 to 8 p.m. Eastern time and Saturdays from 3 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Impact, which has been running since 2010 and minority-owned, reaches 70% of U.S. households through cable and satellite operators. And one quickie note for you, espionage miniseries Ghosts of Beirut debuts tonight on Showtime. Namat Ro Rooney and Dina Shababi co-star. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live in an internet radio exclusive from Tel Aviv, Israel, the star, creator, and writer of the Series Fest 2023 Independent Pilot winner for Best Comedy, Aliza Chenoweth. Aliza, welcome in. It's great to have you live from Israel.
Thank you. I love coming to New York.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you with us. And what do you think about the fact that you got a double win at Series Fest in Denver recently, not only for your pilot, but also for your performance?
Well, it's always nice to win, always a good feeling. I wish I could have been there, but it's a bit far to come, and I have a little baby girl. She's not even 5 months yet. So we went in for Sundance. That was one long, a long way to go. And I'm sorry I couldn't make it. Were you there?
I wasn't, although we did have some of the other Series Fest winners on our show this past Thursday. And they all had a lot of good things to say about what you did and about everybody in general and about how things went in Denver with the Fest.
So it sounds like an overall very good experience. So I'm sorry I missed it, but it's better to hear good news than not.
Absolutely. Aliza, how did you decide to do this pilot and maybe make it a series?
Well, I went to film school in Israel. I moved to Israel when I was 21. I didn't know what to do with myself, so I decided to go to film school. I went to film school. I did a few short films. And then it reached the woman, it reached a network here, and she asked if I wanted to do a series. And I realized that I needed a job because I was finishing film school, so I said yes. But it's not really something I wanted to do. But and then I just kind of like fake it till you make it, and apparently it worked out, which is good.
Well, Well, how much of this pilot is actually your life?
I mean, everything is based off of experiences that, I mean, we can, if it makes anybody happy, we could say, yeah, it's a documentary, or we can just say, you know, parts of it is, it's part of my brain. It's definitely an alter ego. There's things that you could always look for and say, oh, well, this happened in kind of this way. But I think everybody who's going to write is going to take from their own personal experiences. I think just here, because I decided to play the lead role, you know, it beckons the question of how much is fiction and how much is not. But for me, it's all fiction. Yeah.
Well, how long did it take for you to, first of all, develop the character, and secondly, decide, okay, created this, I'm going to write the script, I may as well be the star?
I really think I need to ask myself that question, because I don't really know what the real answer is. I think it's just fun for me to act. So the character was obviously based off of when I first moved to Israel, and I was 21, I was very idealistic. You know, I had Israel to me looked a certain way based on the way I was brought up and the school I went to and, like, what they promised us that it would be. And then eventually you're like, oh, this is not just, like, this, like, amusement park. These are real people who live here. You know, people pay their taxes. People have to pay their rent. People have to make a living. It wasn't this, like, fantasy world that for some reason I thought it would be. So that's really the basis for the character. And we worked on it. It took almost, like, about 5 years to from when I started working on it until we finished, until it was broadcast. Yeah, long time, too long. What was the other question?
I was saying, and Lisa, in putting this together, what did you want to say not only about the character of Chansey, but also about Israel, which incidentally, for those who don't know, has become a major player in the world of television? Quite a few formats from companies like Keshet and other producers and services in Israel have become TV shows, like Homeland, for example, on Showtime.
Yeah. Well, I don't have any agenda. I really was just writing something. My main goal was to create something that people would like. And I think for me, it's more comfortable and natural for me to write something that's a comedy. I mean, the series itself does go through some kind of a tonal change. You know, you got to keep watching to see what it is that I'm talking about. But for me, it was really just to do something that's entertaining and to write about, like, the people that I know, which for me, you know, my bubble was people who are, like, Anglo-Saxons living in Israel. That's originally what I came to. And I really wanted to eventually just, like, be part of Israeli society, hang out with Israelis, which is something that I did with the character. I don't have any, like, political agenda or anything like that. I mean, people are welcome to read into it however they want, because at this point it's no longer just mine. You know, it's out there and people are going to do whatever they want with it. But for me, I just wanted to create something entertaining and I wanted to somehow make some money. That was my goal.
We're speaking with Aliza Chanowicz. She is the star, the creator and writer of Chansey at the Series Fest 2023 Best Comedy Pilot and Best Comedy Performance winner at the recent festival in Denver, Colorado. And Aliza joins us live from Tel Aviv, Israel this half hour in our first ever weekend edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Nab, I'm with you on the other side of the Atlantic, namely Nueva York, where it is 58 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy you're with us for our first ever weekend edition. For those who don't know and joining us for the first time, we are usually on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Mondays and Fridays at 3, 10 Eastern, noon Pacific. And as I mentioned earlier, we had some of the other Series Fest 2023 pilot winners on our show on a special edition this past Thursday afternoon. If you missed that episode, you can catch up. Very simple. Go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Go to our website, tomorrowwetelevised.com, with the fine people on podium, or to your favorite podcast site, whether it is Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Acast, Odyssey, formerly CBS Radio, and others. And that's all available to you right now. And you can also check out our recent episodes as well at all of those wonderful places, including blogtalkradio.com /televised. Alisa, here's what the jury at SiriusXM had to say first about your program. Strong story, acting is top-notch, started with a laugh, important in a comedy, visually appealing to look at, deeply flawed protagonist told with vulnerability. The vision was executed flawlessly. And here's what the jury had to say about your performance. Experienced the most character-wise from start to finish. Fearless. We were invested in Alicia's performance from the start. The role was written for her. Your reaction to what the jury had to say.
Thank you very much. I guess the role was written for her because I thought I could do it. And I'm glad that it worked out for me because it definitely was a chance. I didn't study acting. I just thought it would be something that would be fun for me to do. And I acted in my 2 short films that I did when I was in film school. So I guess I already had experience. So I figured, you know, I think I could do it again. And what was nice was I don't know how it works in America, but here they kind of trusted me and they went with me from the beginning. They didn't question that choice whether I would act or not, which I know is something that I shouldn't take for granted. Of course, everyone puts their nose in other places. That's just the industry that we're in. You know, you're not on your own.
Did you film or take this pilot just in Israel, or did you also go back to the United States to do some scenes?
No, we filmed everything here in Israel. I actually don't really know how it works in the U.S. because I've only worked on sets and stuff here, but we also don't really film pilots here. What we do is we film everything in one go. They would give an approval for, like, a pilot script. So but there's not enough money for us to film an episode and then have it approved and then go and film the rest of the series. So it is, I guess, in a way they're taking more of a chance. And I originally there were 12 episodes and I had to cut it down because of production and to 11 and then eventually I rewrote it down to 10. There was an episode that we went to New York, but that didn't fit the budget. So in the end we had to bring New York to Israel. You work mm-hmm. with your limitations.
So you actually did more than one pilot, one episode. You did a whole batch.
We did everything. We did the entire season in one go. We film based on the location, not chronologically. So some of the hardest scenes we filmed in the first week. There's something nice about it. It's also really hard to get into.
Did you just film in Tel Aviv or did you go to other parts of Israel, Jerusalem, other places?
Well, Jerusalem is really hard to film in general, but we did about a week of filming there. Overall, we filmed over about 3 months, and in that time, at one point, we had to shut down because everybody got corona for about a week. But we filmed not necessarily in Tel Aviv. We had like a day in Tel Aviv, but mostly like in the surrounding areas, and a lot of the stuff that looks like it's inside apartments in Jerusalem, we actually filmed closer to Tel Aviv just because it's really, I think, a money thing. You know what I mean? Like it's further away in Jerusalem. It's not near all the equipment. So we just have really good people on set, like the cinematographer and the art and the props and everything. It's also important for me that, like, sometimes I feel like I watch shows and you have someone, a character who maybe isn't supposed to be so well off, but they have these amazing apartments. And I think there's something that happens in shows in Israel where there's maybe something that feels a bit more realistic.
Mm-hmm. How does the character evolve from the pilot to the other episodes? Again, I go back to what the jury, the people that judged your pilot and others, had to say. It just strikes me that, that they experienced the most character-wise from start to finish, and they really felt that the character was fearless, and it was a character that they could invest in. So how does the character evolve and your performance evolve from that pilot to the other episodes?
I don't want to give anything away. I just will say that there was, you know, a discussion of the fact that she might do some things in the first episode, at least in the beginning, that might make her seem in a way unlikable. But if it's entertaining enough, people I will hopefully continue watching and then kind of eventually understand the reason behind some of her choices. And as the series evolves, her character also comes more aware of her surroundings and the way that her behavior affects other people. That's the intention.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier that one of your co-stars was Henry Winkler. How did he get involved in this?
So one of the directors, there's two directors, Aaron Geva and Mickey Trieste. So Aaron, well, originally we were looking for an actor in Israel that could play my father, but we didn't find someone here that we felt really fit the bill perfectly. And then we started to look to the U.S., and Aaron made a list of all of the actors that are Jewish, that could play, that look like they could play my dad in the right age range. And then he eliminated all the people that hated Israel, and there was a very short list, and Henry Winkler was at the top, and he sent him an email, and I think just the time was right, and he had never been to Israel, and he liked the script, and he agreed to come. And Caroline Ahrens, who plays his wife, she's in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, she also, you know, it was also like good timing, and her best friend lives in Israel who plays a character in episode 3. And that also helped us, like, you know, bring her in. Kind of a lot of luck, a lot of mazel.
At any time did you sort of get goosebumps like, oh, my God, I've got Fonzie from Happy Days. I've got the guy who's doing Great and Barry and all these wonderful supporting performances of late on different television series?
I don't really get starstruck. I will say that my parents were very excited about it. My father was like, he's playing me. And I'm like, well, it's a character. But for me, I was really just, you know, we had met over Zoom, and he seemed like a mensch, and he seemed really nice. And I was really just hoping that this would be someone that I could really work with. And I was, my main concern was, I hope I don't have any divas on, you know, on the set, people that are difficult to work with just because they're famous or something. But when I was working with Henry and Caroline, they were just super professional, and it's very different, I think, the surroundings and the way that everything works on, like, an Israeli set. You know, there's no trailer for anyone. And they were great, and they were team players.
And given the fact you had two directors to work with, what was it like to go back and forth with these directors, and given the fact that this is the first time you really acted in a major way, at least with a television series, did they give you any ground rules, any advice in terms of how to play the camera, how to play your own character, how to be with other people in your role?
Well, for me to play that character, it just kind of came naturally. And when it came to choosing a director, because I knew that I wanted to act, I can't do everything. And it was really important for me to find a director that felt like a peer, someone that, you know, we could make decisions together, not somebody who would try to take the project from me, you know. And this was my first series. And Aaron and Mickey, Aaron was also the script editor. I knew them from film school. They had just done one short film before this. And, you know, we took a chance in the fact that neither of us had ever done a project of this size before. I mean, it was a gamble, but it worked out really well because I think everybody, even what we maybe lacked in experience, we made up for it in our, you know, determination to get it done the best that we could, and also to enjoy it while we're going. And I think that I don't think that if you enjoy something, it'll necessarily come out right, but you spend so much time on a set, you know, 3 months just actually filming, and before that, there's all this other work that goes into it. If you're not really enjoying it, I mean, some people like to suffer, I guess, in the process of, like, writing and stuff. For me, it wouldn't really be worth it. Yeah.
Kenzie is one of the 55 independent TV series pilots that were showcased earlier this month at Series Fest, the annual TV festival in Denver, Colorado. It won for Best Comedy Pilot and for Best Comedy Performance. And we've got the person behind both, Aliza Chanowitz. She is the star, the creator, and the writer of not only what is a pilot, but is also a series. In a moment, we'll find out the future of that series, both on Israeli television and here in the U.S. of A. Aliza joins us live from Tel Aviv, Israel, in an Internet Radio exclusive interview right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. Thanks for joining us on our first ever weekend edition in nearly 16 years of presenting the program about TV's current and future, live from New York, where it's now 58 degrees and mostly sunny skies after we had a deluge of rain, not only for us, but for most of the East Coast over the last 24 hours. And we're delighted to have you with us. And if you have a question or comment in our many minutes with Aliza, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And be sure to be back with us tomorrow. It's our fourth episode in 5 days here on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're usually here Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. We'll also be on next Thursday and Friday. And joining us on Friday among our guests will be one of the top executives in Spanish language television, Steve Mandela. He is the Chief Revenue Local Media Officer of Estrella Media, which is more than just one broadcast network, Estrella TV, these days. It's quite a few, including the only game show network in Spanish, Estrella Games. Steve Mandela, live with us Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, part of your Memorial Day weekend right here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. So, Aliza, first of all, since Series Fest, since your wins, have you gotten any calls about, hey, let's put, since you have a series already made, let's put it on television somewhere?
I think that the network is working on it, and I think right now, you know, with the writer's strike, things are a bit complicated, and it's totally, you know, the writer's strike makes a lot of sense. This is something that affects my business as well, even though I'm over here. This is something I think that affects everyone. So I don't really know what that means in terms of, like, what's going on with sales, but I, you know, I hope that it'll reach everybody soon, and I hope that the strike will be over, because I hope that, you know, the writers will get what it is that they're asking for. I don't think that they're asking for anything that's so crazy. You know, people want to make a living, and it seems like other people at the top are doing just fine, and all the people who are creating the content are trying to figure out how they're going to keep doing it.
Let's explore that a little more in a second, but first of all, has your series played on Israel television or Israeli television?
Yeah, it came out in December and went until January, and it got really good reviews. You know, you never know who's going to watch it, which was so exciting. I got recognized on the street, and so far the people who have said anything to me to my face have all said nice things, so that's good. But I also gave birth, like, as the series was coming out, so my mind was definitely somewhere else during that time.
Just to let folks know, here in the United States, where is it played? What network or what service did it play on in Israel?
It's called HOT. There's only a few networks in Israel. It's HOT, H-O-T.
Going back to the writer's strike, we've been following it, of course, here in the U.S., Aliza, and it seems that the writers are very concerned about two things in particular. They're concerned about shorter orders for programming networks because of main concerns like in Netflix and Amazon Prime Video and Peacock and so forth, where they're now offering 10-episode series or 8-episode seasons. So they're concerned about having steady work. The other thing is artificial intelligence. Give me the Twilight Zone episode, The Obsolete Man.
Did I see it? I don't know. I didn't see it.
It's a very famous episode of The Twilight Zone, which deals with Burgess Meredith, the great actor, plays a librarian who is determined in a future society obsolete.
Oh, except some, and he has the glasses?
Right, correct. That's a different episode, Time Enough at Last, yes. Burgess Meredith did 4 episodes of Twilight Zone. They're all great performances, too, by the way. Brilliant actor. And if you haven't seen it, Mice and Men, the movie with Lon Chaney Jr. It's another great performance by that man. He was not just the Penguin on Batman, but a really sensational actor. One of the very best. And Rocky, of course. That's going a little bit off field. But anyway, you get the sense that AI has really gotten into the head of the guild, suggesting we've got to deal with this now. We can't wait till it hits us all in the face. We need to have some parameters about how this is going to be dealt with by the producers so that we're not obsolete, because they see it as a threat. What do you think?
Well, it definitely is one of the things, along with my kids, that keep me up at night, just because it's this, like, fear of the unknown, and I really should stop reading so much of the news. And it really, everything is just a big question, but I think I don't see what's the problem of putting in, you know, regulations now to have AI help us, not necessarily take over our place. I mean, there is a question, you're saying, well, if... I think sometimes when you watch something like Netflix right now, it might also be trends, but right now what I'm getting is I don't feel like once in a while you feel like you get something that's like quality content. And sometimes you feel like they just want to produce more of the same because it's a business, you know what I mean? And then in terms of writers, you go, well, will AI produce something that's just what people want to keep watching? Or I really don't know. The thing with the amount of episodes, I feel like that's something that can be worked around. The fact that people also want royalties, and you know, all the money is kept a secret in terms of like streaming, how many people are watching it. I mean, it's a business, but it's also it's my business now.
Everybody's business. Yeah, go ahead.
But also, I mean, in Israel, like, if people don't go into this industry hoping to make money, you really have to do it because you want to continue doing the work. You have to be passionate about it because, you know, it's like everyone here who also works in the industry, there's very few at the top who are actually making money just from this. And other people are, you know, I translate scripts and things like that so I can, like, pay for food. I'll do odd jobs. I was trying to get a job at a fish store. Like, this is not where I get my bread and butter. But I think it works different in the U.S., and I think that it's great that it gives a job to all these people, and now they feel threatened, and they should be taken care of. Also, someone's reaping the benefits from all of their work, you know? And they're not the ones who are getting what they deserve.
Yeah. Well, the hope is, and I mentioned this on our last episode Friday, it's time for both sides to get back to the bargaining table. For the Writers Guild to not just do picket lines, and the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers to stop hiding behind press releases and position papers, and both get back in that bargaining table and negotiate that deal, because it can be done. There can be common ground in this, even if it's still very nebulous where artificial intelligence goes. Before you leave us, Lisa, have you thought about a season two?
I guess only right now I'm starting to come out of the whole blur of everything. So I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if it needs a season two. You know, I think it's still a question, and we'll see, hopefully, if the show, you know, takes off beyond Israel, and then I guess we could see if it does and where it goes.
If you want to know more about not just Kenzie, but also all of the pilot winners and pilots, by the way, 55 of them that were in competition early this month at Series Fest 2023 in Denver, here's where you go online, SeriesFest.com. That's SeriesFest.com. And if and when Aliza's series does hit American television, we will let you know, and we'll bring her back on this program. Aliza, thank you very, very much for spending your Sunday with us. Congratulations
to you.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, thank you. And again, congratulations on the double win at Series Fest. We all hope this Writers Guild settles, and I really hope that your series does get a shot at American television, and maybe it's the beginning of a great long run for the show, too.
Amen, amen, amen.
Thank you so much, Aliza. Congratulations to you and your family. All the greatest. Take care.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Aliza Chanowitz, live from Tel Aviv, Israel, this Sunday morning here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Coming up in our next half hour, we have our classic trivia week, and then we'll ask the question, and it's a great question, is this any way to promote the next Summer Olympics? I'm talking about what NBC Universal did at their upfront event last Monday at Radio City Music Hall here in New York. You will not believe what they did, which is why we're asking the question. We'll do that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tunein.com. Together, reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. And coming your way at the top of the hour, it's one of Blog Talk Radio's most popular programs, The January Jones Show. Check out January Guest at the top of the hour, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, exclusively here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best VTR always available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised, first ever weekend edition, coming your way on May 21st, 2023 at 9:30 a.m. Eastern, 6:30 a.m. Pacific. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us wherever you are, joining us across the country, around the world. 58 degrees at the bottom of the hour. We still have more to do. Want to again thank Aliza Chanowitz, joining us live from Tel Aviv, Israel, where it is already late in the day their time on a Sunday. And we want to let you know before we go further that originally on today's special episode, we were also going to have Jonathan Boltax. He is the former interactive TV guru at Cablevision Systems, now Altice or Optum, depending on where you are. And he is also the head of a company, which is also based in Israel, as well as here in New York, called Play.Works. It is an interactive games and videos channel. And they have just signed a YouTube star to produce videos and interactive games for that service. It's now available on some smart TV sets and smart devices. And I believe it's also available on Comcast cable systems around the country. Unfortunately, Jonathan, as we speak, I understand, is up in the air somewhere. I do mean literally up in the air on a plane going somewhere. Originally, he was supposed to be with us live from Israel. Unfortunately, he could not make it today. We are rescheduling him for an episode down the road. So anyway, we'll keep you posted about, and we understand there may be some new news coming soon about more new programming coming your way on Play.Works. Again, this seems to be a year where games and gaming interactively on smart TV sets and smart devices where you don't need a console or something like a PlayStation or an Xbox. You just use your voice remote, or and a special controller you aim at the TV screen. I guess all part of artificial intelligence that's now put in these sets and these devices that allow you to have interactive gameplay and so much more on the television set. So we will keep you posted, and we hope to have Jonathan with us on a future episode. Coming up, we have a comment. Is this any way to promote the next Summer Olympic Games? We're talking Paris 2024 on the networks of NBC Universal, led by Peacock and NBC. But first, it's time for our final run with this classic trivia question. For those of you who have never heard our show before, for the last few years, we have a regular segment that we call the classic trivia question. And it pretty much says what it is. We ask a question, a TV trivia question, and if you're first with the correct answer, you can win some nice prizes. In this case, if you are first with the answer, and this is the last time we're offering this question, you can win, courtesy of the BBC, a Starbucks reward card. Good any Starbucks. Plus, we've got from the folks at Canela Media, the fast-rising Spanish-language media organization, we have a new coding book based on their popular new series and their first-ever Big Tune series, Super Ellis, which will be going into a second season. We had one of the key people, Canela Kids, on our show earlier this year. You not only get the coloring book, you also get a special set of four crayons. And that's all your way if you can get this question. Here it is. Get your thinking caps on. Name the actor who played the Rebel on The Rebel. That's, the character is Johnny Yuma. The show is ABC's program that ran from 1959 to 1961. Very, very popular. Made the actor a household name. And it had the theme song by Johnny Cash. You can watch episodes on YouTube. So again, the question, name the actor who played the Rebel on The Rebel. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple0404@yahoo.com. When you do, enclose your name. Make sure you have your mailing address. So if you're first with the correct answer, you win the prize. We can get the prize out to you ASAP. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow, one last time, on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. One more time, the question. Name the actor who played the Rebel on The Rebel. And you can catch episodes of that show on YouTube to find that answer. Email me, Sooner you do, sooner you win. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Remember, as we say around here, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so today, and all the very best. And now, time for a comment. The next Olympic Games will be taking place in Paris in the summer of next year, 2024. And once again, the networks of NBC Universal, led by Peacock, the mega content service, and NBC, will be carrying coverage. And last Monday, NBC Universal had a superb opportunity before thousands of people from the advertising industry, other aspects of media, journalists like yours truly, to showcase their coverage. And NBC, unfortunately, despite the fact that their coverage of the Olympics in recent years, headed by Molly Solomon as executive producer, has been fantastic. The visuals, the play-by-play, the color commentary, the moments have been superb. Absolutely superb. Won all sorts of awards. And the viewership has gone down, 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 down. Why? Well, a lot of factors. Not all NBC's fault. First, the International Olympic Committee. Be very honest. They're the worst sports organization in the world, and they've been that way for over 50 years, ever since the 1972 massacre at the Munich Games, and how it was handled by then the head of the Olympics, Avery Brundage, who some called Avery Brundage, for how he handled the games, which were absolutely terrible, before, during, and after the massacre of Israeli athletes during those Olympics. And what did the International Olympic Committee do? Well, about 15 or so years ago, they decided on their own, we're going to get greedy. Instead of having the Olympics summer and winter for a single year every 4 years, which made the Olympics so special, we're going to have either a winter or a summer games every 2 years. Now, keep in mind that nobody asked for this. There wasn't a hue and cry, oh, we got to go this way. They got greedy and did this. And that was the beginning of the downturn of the Olympic movement. The second thing they did in more recent Olympics, including the last Winter Games last year from China and the last Summer Games, which were postponed because of the coronavirus pandemic, supposed to be in 2020 in Japan, in Tokyo, then went to 2021 and was played before empty stadiums because of how that country was treating the pandemic at the time. Well, they decided, we're not going to have the game start with an opening ceremony. We're going to have events 2, 3, 4 days before. How do you think the opening ceremony is going to go? Isn't the whole idea of the opening ceremonies to open the games? It cheapens the product. It makes it an afterthought. And, of course, the viewership went down. And if that wasn't enough, check this out. Sports media, whether it is local radio and television stations, sports radio stations, sports talk networks, ESPN, CBS Sports Network, Fox Sports 1 and 2, etc., do not cover the games. Do not cover Olympics. It's an afterthought. And in some cases, no thought. When was the last time you saw an Olympic highlight on SportsCenter's Top 10? Really, when? And for a lot of people, the Olympics are a bygone memory. And the major Olympic sports, whether it's winter games like figure skating, skiing, speed skating, and in the case of the summer games, track and field, gymnastics, swimming, the key sports that really got their prominence in the Olympics, you don't see much of it anymore. And if you do see it on television, you're like having to turn the dial to find it because it's not well publicized and promoted. The U.S. Figure Skating Championships, very simple. NBC did not do any promotion whatsoever. No press release, no conference call, no nothing. Result, probably the lowest viewership in the history of figure skating competitions on NBC. And as a result, the viewership of the Olympics has gone down, 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 especially in the second week of Olympic Games. And part of the problem, in addition to everything I just mentioned, is that the marketing and promotion effort by NBC continues to be on a horrendous level. Remember during the Summer Games, if you watched CNBC, you had Separate Smith daily have these spots saying, you know, watch the Olympic Games on CNBC, but they wouldn't tell you what events were on that day or that night. And last time around, there was nothing about USA. There was no Telemundo coverage, etc. And by the way, Peacock, which has done the last two Olympics, one winter, one summer, has done very well. They've gotten better and better. They've had all kinds of coverage. It was the one place that you could see the games live taped any way you wanted to. And they're going to do the same thing again in Paris next year. So with all that coming in, and we're 14 months away, I get it, and you have this wonderful crowd. You open Up Brunch Week here in New York. You have several thousand people at Radio City Music Hall. And you are having sports people and news people, because of the writer's strike, having to introduce all the segments. One would think this would be a great place to really generate more interest in the Olympics. So what was done? Well, it starts with a wonderful video montage. A montage of great Olympic moments, the triumphs, the tragedies, the breathtakingness of it all, the humanity, the humanness, beautifully edited, marvelous. Now, in the past, this montage would probably be done alongside wonderful music by John Williams, who's done so many Olympic fanfares, starting with that brilliant one in Los Angeles in 1984. Or it'd be done to a song like One Moment in Time by Whitney Houston, or the annual March Madness song at the end, One Shining Moment. Did that happen? No. What happened? They had, as this wonderful montage, beautifully edited, captures a lot of moments, was flashing on the screen at Radio City Music Hall, the gigantic screen for everybody to see, a hard rock band, a hard rock band, a really hard rock band was performing. Who knew where it came from? With a lead singer whose voice you could not understand. Not one word as the band was playing. Not one word was understood. Not one word. And when the performance was over, you could tell the audience was sort of nicely applauding. And that was it. Nothing. Where was Mike Tirico or one of the NBC, you know, sportscasters or an Olympic athlete coming on the stage to say, hey, here's what we're doing. Here's what NBC is doing. Here's what Peacock is doing. And so on and so forth. Nothing. It was just that song, as blaring as it was, with that montage, and that was it. Is this any way to promote the next Summer Olympics? Is this any way to get viewership back on track in what may be the most important Winter Games ever in terms of whether viewership can bounce back? I'm not saying anywhere near like the 50, 60, 70 million people who used to watch the games in prime time on NBC before the ABC or CBS. No, it's not. Who thought of this? Really, who thought of this? The good news is that NBC has 14 months to right the ship. And I really hope that they will take as much of that 14 months as possible to really rethink the whole marketing and public relations and promotional aspect of how it can be done. And maybe to reach out to these to all the sports media reps in the world and say, you know what, we got to save these Olympic Games. Maybe we can't get back because of all the television, because I got news for you. The other networks, which used to play dead, are not playing dead anymore. Not when you have mega content services like Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus and even Peacock. When Peacock, by the way, had the Winter Olympics, they ran Bel Air. Remember? They've actually premiered Bel Air, one of their biggest series of the year, now in getting ready for season 3. Bel Air premiered during the Olympics. And it got great, and in spite of the Olympics, got great, great, great viewership. So, unlike decades past, where when the Olympics ran in prime time or any time, everyone else played dead, they played reruns or whatever, they're not playing dead anymore. Netflix isn't. Hulu won't. Disney Plus won't. Max, which kicks off, by the way, Tuesday from HBO Max, they won't play off. Discovery Plus will play. They are going to run original programming through the entire Olympics in 2024. So this really is the cliff for viewership. I really believe that the Paris Olympic Games next summer will determine how Olympic viewership goes the rest of this decade and beyond. I really do believe that NBC can right the ship. Maybe not for NBC, but certainly for Peacock. Peacock, I think, has to become the place to watch the games in any which way, shape, or form. Live, tape, highlights, interactivity, etc. And NBC, if they can do stuff live, and they will, by the way, in Paris, like 9 hours in the daytime, and then do a three-hour recap, fine. And, of course, you have Spanish-language coverage on Telemundo and Universo. You can have USA and CNBC do other things with individual sports in daytime. Or just cover Team USA, or just cover this other Team Canada, et cetera. And if you want the viewers, you are going to have to win them over. And it's going to take a better marketing, a better promotion, a better public relations strategy. It is going to take getting out to the press, getting out to sports media, and having partnerships and relationships with the U.S. Olympic Committee and the International Olympic Committee to make us care. It's also going to take, and I hope that NBC does this, that they tell the International Olympic Committee, start your games with the opening ceremony. Don't start with events that take place on the Tuesday before, the Wednesday before, the Thursday before, the Friday before. You start the games with an opening ceremony, and you close the games with a closing ceremony. That's it. Incidentally, I hear the opening ceremony is going to be really special. It's actually going to be done along one of the top rivers in Paris. And then many of the events are going to take place in major locations or near major landmarks of Paris and other cities in France. So this Olympics, if the weather is gorgeous, could be really spectacular, more spectacular than ever. I'm pulling for NBCU to pull this out. No, we'll never get back to, because of all the television services out there, we will never get back to the way things used to be. Sorry, no more 50 million, 60 million, 70 million people watching at the same time. And we can get the viewership up. We can make Peacock the hub. We can define the roles that each NBC service or NBCU service is going to have, not only for these games in Paris, but for 2 years from then, the next Winter Games, and then the big games in 2028 here in the United States in Los Angeles. And it is going to take a lot. And it's going to have to take NBCU getting out of its comfort zone, just the way that Molly Solomon has done with her coverage of the Olympics, and really, really driving the viewership, really driving the interest, inciting the interest. And you do that with the press, and you do that with various organizations, and you do it with the communities out there. It is going to take a lot, and it will be worth it. Because, frankly, I love the Olympics. I've grown up on them. They are marvelous. They deserve to have a place in the world. We need a place where the athletes of the world can engage in great competition that inspires everybody and shows us that, yes, we can live in a world where sports can be a common ground for anybody in the world, no matter their race, no matter their gender, no matter where they came from. And the networks of NBC Universal can lead the way to that. And the time to start doing that is now. And not to do it the way it was done last Monday at Radio City Music Hall. I'll ask the question again. Is this any way to promote the next Summer Olympics or Olympics going forward? No. And what say you out there? I really would like to hear from you about this. I'd like to hear your thoughts about the Olympics and whether or not you might want to watch the Olympics. And what will it take for you to watch the Olympics next summer in Paris and beyond? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure you enclose your name and where you're from. And you can also use our wonderful question box at tomorrowbetelevised.com, our website. And if we use your suggestion or your question on the air and I answer it, you'll get the credit. And for those of you that are hearing this program for the first time because it is a Sunday morning, I want to invite you to continue to listen to us. You know, this is a program about where TV is at and where it's going. And that's been our goal from the get-go when we started in 2007, nearly 16 years ago. Incidentally, we started on nowlive.com, and in May of 2009, we went to Blog Talk Radio. And incidentally, this month begins our 15th year on Blog Talk. And over the last year, we have picked up a lot of podcast destinations. Chances are your favorite podcast site is now taking our show, whether it is Acast or Podbean or Spotify or Player.fm or Google Podcasts or iTunes. So we want to thank all of those sites for taking our program. We think we do something special here. We're live. We're interactive. We invite you to be in the dialogue. We bring you expanded, exclusive interviews with the people that make TV happen, whether it's people who have done TV for years or people like Aliza that you just heard live from Tel Aviv, Israel. And our guests, by the way, have come to us from all over the world, not just the United States. We've had guests from Canada. We've had guests from all over Europe. We have had other guests from Israel. We've had guests from South Africa. We've had guests from Australia, New Zealand, all over the world. And we are a show that is also committed to showcasing diversity on television, to showcase the new networks that may very well be the new place you watch. We also are interested in showcasing what smart TV sets and smart devices are doing with interactive television, being smart home hubs, doing interactive fitness and telemedicine and tele-education and all that. We like to think that this program is your early warning system of what is new and coming your way in television, so that you, the TV viewer, have a better understanding of where the medium is going and your role in it. And we really invite you to tune into this program regularly, tell your friends to do so, and if you can do it live, be part of the conversation. We want interactivity. We foster dialogue. We want common ground. And we appreciate you. And we really encourage you to be part of this program. I know that there are times when we've had guests that you would not believe that have drawn tremendous phone calls and tremendous chat room activity. So I want you to know that we appreciate you, our audience, because you make this show tick. You've gotten us into our 16th year. You've put us as a simulcast from Blog Talk Radio with Spreaker and TuneIn Radio. You've gotten us on podcast sites. And if there's a podcast site, incidentally, that's not taking this program, we invite you to let them know. Do it kindly. Let them know you'd like to hear this show. You listen to it. And let me know who to talk to, at whether it's the Audible or whether it's Pandora or whoever. And we'll talk to them. I had a wonderful conversation recently at the podcast Upfront here in New York from the Interactive Ad Bureau with Suzanne Grimes, the head of Westwood One. We are being reviewed for being on both Westwood One and Cubeless' podcast network, Cubeless Media, the parent company of Westwood One. And we'll let you know how that turns out. So it really is you that makes this show work, and we appreciate you very, very much. And we appreciate Aliza Chanowitz for joining us live from Tel Aviv, Israel, on a Sunday morning, late Sunday her time, to be with us. And we appreciate all of you tuning us in for what is a really historic first, our first ever weekend edition. Love to let you know what you think. So please do email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, or find me on social media. We'll be back with you tomorrow at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. We'll also be on this coming Thursday and Friday. And on Friday, one of our guests will be one of the top executives in Spanish language television, Steve Mandela from Estrella Media. If you came in late on today's episode, or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, it's very simple. Go to our homepage anytime you like. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's the D at the end. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Or check us out on our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com. Available 24/7 there. Or check out your local podcast site, your favorites like Acast and Odyssey and Podbean and Spotify and Verbal and many, many others. And we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our show today? And what's your thoughts generally about where TV is at and where it's going? What do you hope will come out of the writer's strike? I'd love to know. And incidentally, we have invited the writer's strike people. We've invited the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers to come on this program, explain their views. We don't want to negotiate the press. We want to hear what they have to say. And that offer and that invite still stands. So do email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, you can use that email for our classic trivia question. One more time, here's the question. Name the actor who played the Rebel on The Rebel. You can also find me on Facebook, on LinkedIn, at Simon Applebaum, and on Twitter, at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, however you communicate with me, we promise to communicate back with you in 24 hours. That's a promise we take very, very seriously. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever, any day of the week, Sundays included. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not to say those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Annie Cho is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website services provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. Guitars Vegas is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic rest of this weekend and a great week ahead. We'll be back on Monday, regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe, make it great, do something great for somebody else. They'll really appreciate it, and so will you. And whatever you do, be great for you and people you love. They'll appreciate it too. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.